We're live in New York City. Yes! It's the Progressive Radio Network without any technical difficulties. Let's start that bet over again. How you guys doing? Well, you know what? We should keep our voices down because a lot of Republicans and Democrats, House Democrats and Republicans, are sleeping in tonight because you heard they had a sit-in yesterday. We're going to talk about that. We've got a lot of great things to discuss on today's show. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Always love to hear from you. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Listen, I'm so bummed this morning to find out that HBO show Vinyl was canceled. Now, what does this have to do of the importance of life overall? Absolutely nothing, except if you're a music head. You don't even really have to love music to really appreciate the show. It was actually signed for another season. It's produced by Mick Jagger and a bunch of other notable music icons. And Scorsese, I think, was the director. I was totally bummed because it was... Now, I wasn't in the music industry in the 70s. I got into it in the late 80s, and at the height of the radio, certainly, well, for me, it was in the 90s before deregulation with Ronald Reagan. And I can't talk badly about Ronald Reagan now because he's deceased. But anyway, that's actually what turned radio south. But on another note, I'm really bummed. The HBO's show Vinyl was really good. It was all about rock and roll in the 70s, just like the tumultuous lifestyles, the debauchery, the backhanded alley cash deals, whatever needed to be done was done. They were just really making things up as they went along, and it was really great. And it seemed to be, from all what the critics and from all everything I've read, very well documented. You know, it wasn't blown out of proportion, and I thought the acting was really good. So I'm really bummed about that. So, but, you know, I am really happy, though. And well, let me back up a little bit. I didn't talk about Orlando last week, purposefully, because every media outlet in the world was talking about it. And that's not the sole reason why I wouldn't talk about it, just because everyone is talking about it. Because sometimes it's good for listeners to have a respite. You need a break when everywhere you turn, read, click, watch, etc., is talking about the same thing. But that's not the real reason why I didn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it because I'm so god darn frustrated with our country not doing a single thing with the lobbyists, the Republicans. And I'm sorry this gets a little political because I'm not going to tell you what I am. You can probably figure it out. But the reality is, you know, we're allowing this to happen again and again and again on our American soil here. Hey, whatever takes place abroad, we have limited control, and that's a whole different conversation. But the fact is, we have means within our grasp, within pens, legislators, to overturn certain policies, to make into law a simple thing that if you're on the watched list, terror watch list, you cannot purchase a weapon. I mean, really, we can't even pass a simple bill like that? So anyway, the sit-in began yesterday at noon. So House Democrats said, you know what, we've had enough. We need a vote on gun control. And so a sit-in basically took place. The showdown started again yesterday, like before noon, and... It started before Wednesday and ended this morning around 3 a.m. With Paul Ryan, you know, Speaker of the House. He kind of, from what I read, barreled over Democrats, Republicans, and did a rare thing and called for a major appropriations bill. But not on gun control, on the Zika virus. And, hey, that's very important. We got to keep that at bay. But the whole purpose of the sit-in was to delay things until the Speaker and Republicans got so frustrated and so tired and so hungry and had to go to the bathroom or you name and check all the boxes above, said, okay, we relent. Let's give into something. Let's have some dialogue. Let's do a vote here. You know, it's sad to see, but at the same time, that movement, those concentric circles, those ripples will be heard around the world. I'm sure in every media outlet worldwide, the conversation is going to be about the House Democrats sit-in, and of course, the vital, vital vote happening in England today, whether they should stay or remove themselves from the European Union. That's a vital conversation that's happening all day today, And apparently that's going to be a huge record turnout for voters because everyone in England, majority of people in England, want to get out of the European Union because they're very, very solvent and the rest of the EU is not. Anyway, so at 3 a.m. this morning when the gavel was hammered down and shouting and screaming and Paul Ryan basically pulled the plug. As a matter of fact, this is all uncharted territory. He actually had the ability to actually turn out the lights. I mean, literally turn out the lights, Paul Ryan, because Speaker of the House has certain authority. But of course, if he did that, he would have really looked not too good. So hold on a second. I got to take a sip of this massive cup of tea here. Been a long day so far at 11:06 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. Anyway, so I think one of the reasons why they ended this and not put the Democrats in complete torture, a couple reasons. Number one is that they wanted to end it during night hours because less media attention, less public exposure, daylight hours brings a lot more media, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they had more control of the situation during the middle of the night, the Republicans, that is, and Paul Ryan, one and the same. And also, interestingly enough, I think that, when they left the House, the Republicans were yelling, or the protesters were yelling, do your job, do your job, do your job. And when Paul Ryan, threw the gavel down for the last time, ending the sit-in, the Democrats were chanting, shame, shame, shame. We are. We should be shamed at whatever it takes into passing legislation. But what a shame it is in our present time, in 2016, with all these shootings, mass killings, that, hey, who knows how many of these can have been avoided, but the fatalities could have been reduced because of these automatic weapons that are widely available. God bless you. We have a guest in the studio today. The youngest member he's not the youngest, the oldest member of the Farrell offspring. You're going to hear from him later. He's got a lot to say, like his father. Anyway, keep that sneezing down over there, my lad. So anyway, it's a good move. I think it's a move in the right direction. I'm very, very frustrated with Orlando, Connecticut, you name it. The list goes on and on. And it's disheartening for all the people, the family members, the survivors. But I ask, how many people have been touched in Congress by war? How many of their sons or daughters are fighting a war? I bet none. How many of their family members or friends have been gunned down in an innocent massacre? I bet none. Is that what it takes? I hope not. I hope just common sense, good, basic common sense, human decency will change their minds. Okay, all right. Getting very heavy here. So let's lighten it up. Okay, from the How Cool Is This Files, which I always like to do because once in a while, you come across things that are really, really cool. The show, obviously, James Corgan's show is very, very cool. He has a carpool karaoke segment that he does, and they've had great bands. Coldplay, Chris Martin, I mean, the list goes on and on. Let me see. Actually, not even just all singers. Oh my God, what's her name? He just got married. Julie Roberts was on there with, I just forgot his name. He's like the last hunk in Hollywood that got married. George Clooney. And there was someone else in the front seat. It's amazing. It's hysterical. You get people in there. George drives them around. James drives them around. And they blast the music. And Adele was in there. She was hysterical. And sometimes James sings better than them. I'm just kidding. But it's really a riot. So it's kind of cool. Michelle Obama is going to be joining James in the carpool karaoke. And the quote says, "Hi, I'm at the White House today," said the Late Show host on the First Lady's Snapchat account. "I'm going to take a spin in the car and sing songs with." And then Michelle chimes in, "Me." So the video is going to be coming out soon, says CBS, and it's going to be a riot. But if you haven't checked those out, do yourself a favor. It's probably one of the most entertaining things on TV, certainly online. Google James Corden's carpool karaoke, and there's a slew of them, probably about, from what I've seen, like 15 or so. It's pretty cool. Very, very interesting stuff. So I guess we can have a title called like awkward news, because definitely some awkward news. First of all, who would ever want to dine in public naked? What? My son just looked up. What's the benefit of that, right? I mean, like, someone's going to be like, oh, wow, it's one thing I've always done on my bucket list. I really want to dine nude. Like, what's the upside of that? Oh, I know what it is. I just realized it. You don't get any stains on anything. Right? Well, Japan's first naked restaurant bans overweight, tattooed, and elderly customers. The only thing that they're not banning right here that strikes me odd is people with disabilities. So, you know how pop-up restaurants are popping up all over the place, especially on the coast? Basically, they're like a short-stint restaurant. They occupy pretty cool space and really neat chefs, renowned chefs. Sometimes they don't even publicize their names until after the food's gotten really great reviews, and they're like, oh, well, it's Chef Farrell. You know, that's, of course, that's why it's good. Anyway, so it's a pop-up restaurant in Japan, in Tokyo. But that's what they're doing. But they're not. You're not completely naked because you're issued paper underpants. Gross. I mean, you know when you go to the doctor's office or a hospital, how uncomfortable those things and how unflattering they are? So why in the hell would you want to strip down and put one of those, basically a paper diaper on? And probably pay really good money. So the name of the restaurant is called Amrita. And that's Sanskrit for immortality. So I guess that's why we all want to go to Tokyo and hang out in Amrita. So book those tickets now, because I'm sure it's going to be really, really hard to get. So as I mentioned to you, that it's a big day in Britain. They're going to be voting on whether to secede from the EU. A lot of interesting points for that, and I totally understand that. And later on, in just a few minutes, actually, we're going to meet Elaine Hall. Elaine's an amazing person. She was a top Hollywood acting coach when her life changed dramatically in 2004 after her son was diagnosed with severe autism. And traditional behavioral therapies didn't work. She was frustrated. She sought information from experts in the field and then rallied creative people to implement what she learned, and slowly her son emerged out of isolation. Now, the Miracle Project is the organization that she founded, and it's a real groundbreaking, inclusive theater, film, and expressive arts program. It's gotten incredible, incredible media attention. And why shouldn't it? Because it's like every parent, when you have a child with a condition, whether it's rare or commonplace, you want to do everything in your human capacity to make their lives completely as close to normal. And I hate to say the word normal, but it applies. The reality is we want them to have a very, very healthy childhood. And we'll do everything on every level, create outlets, whatever we need to do, knock on every doctor's door in the world. Because it's interesting, when you think you go to experts, you think all the experts are kind of wired in, connected. But a lot of them aren't. And sometimes it takes a parent or a very, very steadfast another doctor to kind of dot all the I's and cross all the T's and realize that between, you know, several people, the answer lies within. Because, you know, maybe doctors are just too busy, or maybe it's a territorial thing, an ego thing. But anyway, we're going to meet Elaine Hall in a few minutes. Hang out momentarily. We're going to meet Elaine. It's a great, great, compelling story. But I want to talk to you very quickly about something I read on The Mighty. TheMighty.com is a great website. I've mentioned before on the website here on the radio show, Insight. It's a great website that shares stories about people with disabilities from all walks of life and all kinds of battles. And this kind of caught my eye because it's a letter to those who are staying in bed today. And that was the title of the article. Basically, I'll surmise it, but basically it basically gives people the right to stay in bed, because whether you're fighting a mental health issue, depression, anxiety, maybe you're just having a bad day, maybe there's so much in your life that's just challenging and troubling that you just need a time out. You just need a mental health day. And so one of the things, a few points I just want to mention to you is that the writer says, I'm not going to say get up, shower, and be productive, because that's so obvious. And not everybody needs to do that. I know when I was going through my worst depression and anxiety, I prided myself. And this is just me. This worked for me. It won't work for a lot of other people. But I prided myself on not allowing that to overrun my life and steer me or make me so scared and intimidated that I had to stay home or had to stay in bed. I was determined not to miss a day of work. I never missed a day of work because of that. And I was really, really proud. It was hard. Believe me, it was incredibly hard. It was incredibly hard. But I prided myself on that. But so for some people, it's great to take a day to stay home. And she also writes, we are safe. We are comfortable. You know, even though if our bodies are comfortable, our minds are racing. We won't remind you that responsibilities that lie outside this room. A great quote because, you know, we think about the guilt factor, like I'm not contributing to my workforce today or my job. You know, if you own a business, that's certainly different and maybe you have more liberty there. But also your friends will understand, she writes. Maybe they'll even come over and join you because, you know what, they'll understand if you cancel and want to lay under a comfortable down comforter because it makes you feel safe. You know, take a health day, you know, once in a while. You know, adult. I love this line. Adulting is hard. A verb. Now a verb is adulting. Adulting is hard. It's so true. You know, there's so many days and challenges and demands that we place on ourselves and society places on ourselves that, you know, sometimes it's you just got to unplug on multiple levels. You know, of course, going to work. If you have kids or you're a single parent, I mean, that's a whole nother ball of wax. As our next guest certainly knows. It's about 17 minutes after the hour 11. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Always love to hear from you. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. What a great day in New York City. Summer. What, 3 days into summer? I love it. Getting dark around 9:20 at night. Unbelievable. So our guest, Elaine Hall, I talked to you momentarily about her. She's incredible. She's the founder and director of the Miracle Project, excuse me, a groundbreaking inclusive theater, film and expressive arts program started on the West Coast in Los Angeles. And she resides in a very, very cool town that I love, Santa Monica. Elaine was a top Hollywood acting coach when life certainly changed dramatically for her after her son was diagnosed with autism. And Elaine developed so many different things for students and in her program, The 7 Keys to Unlock and Understand Autism. She's written a book. She's been featured on the New York Times, referenced by the New York Times as the child whisperer. Certainly is a pioneer in using inclusive theater, film, music, and movement to bring out the best of individuals of all abilities. Elaine Hall, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for such a lovely introduction. And really excited to be here with you today.
You know, thank you so much, and it's a pleasure. As a matter of fact, I have to share something with you guys because I think it was about 3:30, 4 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I got up at an ungodly hour, and I'm reading all this stuff, preparing for my show today and a talk I have today, and I couldn't stop reading on your website, themiracleproject.org, about your incredible background, the tireless work that you've put into this. And I figured, oh, what the hell, you know, I'm going to email Elaine saying, like, this is unbelievable. I can't wait to meet you. And guess what? She pings me back. So you're up at what, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. yourself, you crazy nutball?
It was pretty crazy. I went to sleep at a decent time, and then I came up with all these ideas in the middle of the night. And you know how that happens.
Exactly.
And I tried to get back to sleep, but then I'm like, no, there's no way I'm going to get back to sleep. I got to write this down. So I wrote down this whole vision. And then I thought, okay, I'm up. I might as well check email. And there you were.
Isn't that funny? Two kindred spirits, right?
Yes.
Now, isn't that funny that in 2004, a first-time parent, that this happened to you? Did you know immediately that your son had autism, Neil?
Well, actually, I adopted my son from an orphanage in Russia. And 2004 was when I created the Miracle Project, but I adopted my son in 1996. And at the time, he was 2 years old. When he came back with me to Santa Monica, I love that you love Santa Monica.
Absolutely.
He spun around in circles. He banged his head. He stared at his hand for hours at a time. Now, today, we would know those are the signs of autism. but we're talking now 20 years ago. And you weren't on the air yet. The programs for disability were not as prevalent, and definitely autism was not spoken about as it is today.
I was on the air.
You were 20 years ago?
I'm older than you think, girl.
Oh, my gosh, you look so young. I was just
Thank
checking
you.
You out on your website. Okay.
Wow.
There you go. I didn't know he had autism, but what I knew was that when I would join his world, when I would spin with him and turn it into Ring Around the Rosies, or if he would bang, I'd get pots and pans and start banging with him, all I knew was that we would connect. And that's what does any mother want, but to connect to their child.
Talk about that connection, Lane. Was it a visual, or was it just more of a spiritual, or both, or more?
ABC, all of the above. We had an instant connection. There's a film called Autism the Musical that shows some footage of my first meeting of my son, and he basically ran into my arms in a Russian orphanage in Ekaterinburg, Russia. So we had a bond, but when I would join him, we would connect heart to heart, soul to soul, and visually, and just completely connected. If I would pull him into my world, there would be tantrums and anxiety. And it took a while. It took a year before he was actually diagnosed with autism.
Now you're doing a real role reversal here. I'm the one who's supposed to do the Oprah thing and make the guests cry. Now I'm getting verklempt over here. Come on, now you're taking my job here, for crying out loud. Well, you're now referring to the HBO Emmy Award-winning documentary Autism, the musical, The Miracle Project, which was endorsed by autism experts worldwide, and it brings out the often unheard voices of autism, which featured yourself.
Yeah, that's the film, right.
And what a
right,
great right. visual you just mentioned about meeting your son for the first time. I mean, it really gave me goosebumps. That's incredible. So
yeah.
When did you realize, obviously you mentioned, you heard me talk about in the beginning of the segment here about, you know, as a parent we'll do anything, you know, no stone unturned, and you realize, you know what, when you did find that way to connect with Neil, that there is something more. And when did it, the epiphany happen to create the Miracle Project, and how, on what level?
Well, I also want to comment on what you were saying about the Mighty and the article that you read, and about the the stay in bed day.
Yeah.
And how essential that is.
Is this one of those days? And I'm very privileged to have
I was up bright and early here.
Oh, maybe tomorrow.
But when I first got the diagnosis, I grieved.
Sure.
And I think it's really important to let ourselves feel whatever we need to feel. And I just basically cried for about 3 weeks. But what I realized is that what I cried about was that it wasn't that my son had changed at all. It was that the dream, the expectation, I had to grieve that dream and grieve that expectation of, the traditional, what I thought was normal, what I thought, what I wanted as normal.
Sure.
So first I did that, and I had those stay-in-bed days. I couldn't stay in bed very much because he was pretty, very physical and needed to get out and about, but I gave myself that, and I really want to echo what you said earlier, how essential that is, especially for single moms, especially for, parents of kids who perceive or experience the world differently, is that self-care and the need to accept our feelings. After about 3 weeks, I just jumped right into action, and the internet was just kind of getting steam, and I just started researching kids adopted from orphanages, what autism is, and started the journey. As you said, left no stone unturned, and I started going around the country just learning from doctors everywhere, bringing the message back to L.A., and at the time in L.A., there was an approach called there's two like main schools of thought with autism. One is relationship based, the other is behavioral based. And the behavioral base just wasn't working for my son. Mm-hmm. It was causing him tremendous anxiety. And what I was doing, which was, as you said, meet him where he was working. But people were saying that I'm co-signing his autism, and he's going to get worse. And I kept finding he'd get better. And I fortunately found a doctor in Maryland, Dr. Stanley Greenspan, and also Dr. Barry Prezant in Rhode Island, and learned everything that they were doing, and learned that all of his behavior was communication. And it was up to me to learn, what is he trying to tell me?
Wow.
And when I learned that, I could follow his lead and follow his need and respect all the seemingly bizarre behaviors that he was giving. Traditional therapists thought that I was a Looney Tunes.
And your husband, sorry for the interruption, Elaine, now your husband's a therapist as well. Was he on board with this trial and effort?
Oh, what a great question. That's my second husband.
Oops.
So my first, it didn't work out.
Okay. Hey, it happens.
Which is another topic. You get me on your show another time. I'll talk about single moms.
Oh, then I can get you to cry then.
You'll get me crying.
Okay.
But, yeah, we went separate ways, and I was a single mom for quite a long time with a kid with a disability. And my son's stepdad, you know, pretty much came in, and he is a therapist and has been a phenomenal support, phenomenal, phenomenal support.
So going back to what you just mentioned about the communication pathway, was it difficult to find? I know you talked about, you know, the dancing and the music and the pots and pans, et cetera, a conduit, a platform which that was established?
Well, we just kept doing it, basically. There wasn't anyone doing it, so therapists thought I was crazy, so I just started bringing in all of my crazy creative arts people and training them in what I was learning from the experts, the autism experts, and that became the seeds for the Miracle Project.
So
what actually happened when I got divorced, I needed to make a living. I didn't want to go back in the film industry at that time. I do a lot of work back again in the film industry, mm-hmm. but I didn't then. And I prayed. I didn't know what to do for a living, so I prayed, and a voice came really strong of to do what we were doing with my son in his playroom for many more children. And that's how the Miracle Project started.
It's kind of amazing what the human spirit and capacity is capable of when you're kind of backed into a corner and you really have a adverse situation with essentially seemingly no help.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how you say seemingly no help, because the help is always there.
Yeah, it is. It's true. But, you know, a lot of times I had a great guest on here last week who basically mentioned different circumstances, but the same thing. You know, we all feel like, you know, we're victimized. And, you know, you want the best trajectory for your son or daughter. In your case, your son, Neil. But things happen. I mean, as you stated, every kid has special needs. And when I'm not on the radio here, I speak to audiences across the country about overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, mental health, and a lot of other topics. And basically my mantra is, my difference makes me stronger. I say everybody in this room has a disability, you know, apparent, obvious or not, or perceived or real, you know?
Yes.
So it's just how what we do with them that define us.
That's so beautiful. That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Makes a good t-shirt, right?
I like it.
So now you've appeared in front of the United Nations. You've written a book. I mean, you have a duet CD. I mean, my God, where do we start? You've been featuring on all these networks. You've been coined the whisperer, the child whisperer. I mean, you're big time.
Well, you know, like you said, you just put one foot in front of the other, and you do what needs to be done, right?
So talk about the formulation and the creation of the Miracle Project in terms of realizing, okay, there's certainly a great need to be filled here. But, you know, you don't have an initial after your name. You're not a doctor. You don't have any degrees, certainly, in this area. But you're a mother with a child with autism, and that gives you a world of experience.
Yeah. To backtrack with that, even within the school system, and for your listeners, Very often people would laugh at me with lots of letters by their names, and they'd say, you know, a mother creating, because I homeschooled, you know, my son based on these methods that I was developing, and they would say, a mother running, you know, your child's program? What do you know? And I just, you know, want to enforce to every parent is that we're the ones that know our kids the best.
Absolutely.
And we know it's right, and we know that when something is causing him tremendous anxiety, it's not working. And we know, you know, when they're progressing. So I just want to enforce, you know, that trusting your inner self and really having faith in what you know is right and what your child, ultimately, they're the expert in their disability, and they know what's right for them. We just have to listen. We really have to listen. So, but anyway, to answer the question better, I had to train my friends, my actor, singer, dancer, creative people, in the methods that I was learning to be able to work with my son. And out of it, I created a whole methodology, which is the 7 keys to unlock autism and understand autism. The book is actually called, The 7 Keys to Unlock Autism, Making Miracles in the Classroom. And I now teach online courses about that. I coach people on how to implement those keys. But I was training these people in my playroom and created a whole methodology.
Wow.
And it's that methodology that became the core of the Miracle Project. So what we were doing with my son, one-on-one, I then did with 18 volunteers and 18 kids of all abilities, as I like to say, every kid that would get kicked out of any other acting program.
Fantastic.
From severe autism to Tourette's to Downs to cerebral palsy to ADHD bouncing off the walls. And we basically joined each kid's world. And if one kid needed to run around in a circle, we would have a volunteer run around in a circle with them. If someone needed to hide in under a table, then I would coach a volunteer to hide under the table. And gradually, inch by inch, this chaos emerged into a cohesive theater group ensemble. We created an original musical and performed it live in front of a full capacity audience. And these are kids with severe autism, nonverbal. I mean, and because I didn't have any letters by my name, I didn't know that what we were doing was anything out of the ordinary.
Sure.
Until the film crew said, "Can I film you doing this next year?" And so then I thought, I guess this is something different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of how it happened. Yeah.
My name is Mark Fowler. The show is Insight on a Progressive Radio Network. My guest is Elaine Hall. Elaine Hall is the founder and director of the Miracle Project, a groundbreaking inclusive theater, film, and expressive arts program. Now, you hung a shingle in West L.A., and now you have multiple locations. And also, you've expanded, which I want to touch on in a few minutes, to globally, to India and Ethiopia. Wow, good for you. But so you basically pressure your friends into saying, come on, I can't pay you in monetarily, but you're going to get incredible walk away good spirits and like a feeling like you could never, if you could bottle it, you'd be, you know, a billionaire. And so there it took off. But I'm sure there were times, you know, when you were trying to get, you know, running in circles with these kids or going under tables that you probably, you know, maybe a little voice sometimes, did it occur in the back of your head saying, oh my God, have I bitten off more than I can chew? Or is this something that's really outside of my purview? And how did other kids react possibly when a child or other children were not cooperating?
Ah, oh, such a great question, Mark. First of all, and I got goosebumps, and I wrote another book called Now I See the Moon, and that's the actual history and story and evolution of all of this.
I love the title, by the way.
Thank you. So basically, every day it was like, what am I doing? What did I think I could do? I mean, parenting a child with a severe disability, what am I doing?
And that's then taking on opening doors and welcoming other children in there.
Exactly. And I likened it to, not to get too spiritual, but it's a progressive radio station, so there I go. But basically, that's when I would pray the most, and that's when I would ask for guidance, and that's when I would ask for support from wherever it would come, and it always came. It always came. And there's a midrash. My faith is Jewish faith, and there's a midrash that when Moses was coming down carrying the tablets, he would complain that they were too heavy and he couldn't do it. But when he had faith that he could, angels supported the carrying. And I think that's what, every time I would tune in, there was a voice inside of me. Even though I could barely make a living, I was, I was a single mom. I, really was challenged in so many ways. And I'm like, what am I doing this project? And this voice just kept saying, if you do this for me, I promise you, you will be taken care of. And I had to listen to that voice and kept putting one step in front of the other, to being where we are today. And I had no idea often what I was doing. It was just, Dr. Barry Prezant likens it to, you're walking on a tightrope, but when you put your foot down, that's the only time the rope appears. When you take that step.
Interesting, sure. And the worst case scenario, you were basically creating a loving, safe, fun environment. So, I mean, the worst case scenario, they had a good time and or were possibly less anxious and maybe were able to be themselves.
That's exactly what we did. We created an environment, and that's the whole thing. The show was just the tip of the iceberg. Mm. What goes on for those 22 weeks is exactly what you're saying. It's the one place for many, 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 many kids and now teens and now young adults where they can be themselves. Like if they need to flap their hands, we flap with them and we turn that into a dance. We start dancing around the room together. And perceived obsessions, we say, are preferred interests. And we develop those and create a play around preferred interests. I mean, I have one student who she rolled on the floor and cried for weeks and weeks and weeks. And we rolled on the floor with her until she felt safe, and she would sing a little bit. And each week we'd have her sing a little bit more until, as she says, opera came out of her throat. She's now becoming an international opera singer. She was the first autistic that was part of the Los Angeles Children's Opera Company. I took her to China with me last summer, and she performed in front of 500 psychologists.
Fascinating.
To show the hope, the possibility. She sung at the Pantages Theater. She was on the TV show Parenthood.
Great show.
Yes.
Love it. And it was a great way, sorry to interrupt you here, and that was a great way to introduce a good foray for people in a general public sense to get a really good exposure to autism.
Yes.
In a realistic way.
Exactly. And our students from the Miracle Project, many of them, who when they came to me had never had a friend, had tremendous anxiety. Through the coaching process, they actually had roles on the TV show. There's a movie coming out in the fall, or maybe December, with Dakota Fanning, and I had, my students are going to be in that as well. And these are kids who had so much anxiety and fear and overwhelm, but through the process of the Miracle Project, they found their voice.
Wow. And a lot of other voices have joined them. You have a duet CD, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. I mean, Chaka, 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 Chaka Khan. I mean, the list is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. So all these ideas just keep snowballing. Obviously, you have a connection, let your tentacles in the celebrity dome of the West Coast, which is, I'm sure, is vast and deep.
Yeah.
So these are great ideas, and it just gives students... so it's a program's after 22 weeks or a complete program?
22 weeks, and then we do an original musical. We're actually going to be in New Orleans in July doing a training, a Miracle Project training, and then at Brown University in the beginning of 2017, we're doing a training. And then and we have an anti-bullying play.
I read
that. I saw that you
do
anti-bullying. We have a full anti-bullying play, which was created by young adults, teens and young adults, who had been bullied. And it's all abilities. So mm-hmm. we have those who do not have a perceived disability that are part of the troupe. And we're currently raising the funds to have that, to perform that at schools all over. We're going to start all over Los Angeles and then hopefully perform it all over the country. And we'll be having a DVD of the show available as well.
Is the title of that show The Intimidation Game?
Yes.
Yeah, great. So fantastic. How long is that actual show?
The show is about 50 minutes.
And I saw a clip in terms of, I'm not sure if it's actually from The Intimidation Game, but certainly kids just revealing how it feels to be bullied. And nobody likes to be bullied. I mean, no one should feel less than whole in this world. I don't care where you're from, your socioeconomic, sexual preference, anything. To be scared is just awful in this in this lifetime, especially if you have a disability and can't articulate possibly how you feel.
Yeah.
But it's great that you created a platform for them to obviously either show people how they feel and or how to maybe turn the tables or give possible outlets or solutions, et cetera. I mean, I love it.
That's exactly it. They reveal how they feel, and then we also offer solutions, which is find the people who you truly relate to. A lot of guys, and we all do that, they want to be with someone, a group that isn't them. So it's like find the real you, find the people who love you. If you're a nerd, be with the nerds. If you like to sing, be with the singers, but find who you are. Find your true friends. And then we have a whole song called Whatever. And that's if a bully starts to insult you, just say, whatever. Look at them like they're the ones that are less, like you said so beautifully, less than whole. Because obviously most people who bully, it's because they're what they say about themselves.
Mm, sure. Now, when you're asked to speak in front of the United Nations Assembly, and or alone or with your students, does that really crystallize your work for you?
Yes, it's an opportunity to really share what I've been fortunate to discover and uncover. I mean, the first time I spoke at the United Nations was when we screened Autism the Musical. The second time was when my book actually was selected. Now I See the Moon was selected by the United Nations. And then the third time, this was really an amazing time, because I shared on that I don't believe we should ever use the word high-functioning and low-functioning, and that exactly what you had said, Mark, which is we all have abilities and disabilities, and that it's really what we do with who we are. And I was really proud to share that at the United Nations. And then cut to this, that very same day, my son presented at the United Nations.
Wow.
In front of 400 people.
Wow. Good job, Mom. And Neil.
He's nonverbal. He uses an iPad to speak. He speaks through typing and a PowerPoint presentation. I was a nervous wreck, and he was as calm as could be.
That's usually how it is, right? And Neil is 23 now?
Actually, he just turned 22. He just graduated and walked with the graduating class of 700 people. He walked.
Bravo.
He got a certificate of completion. He chose not to be on the academic track because he's very clear what he wants to do for a living.
Which is?
It's actually three different things, but the primary is organic gardening. He has a job working as an organic gardener. He's also a self-advocate, so he presents at conferences. We present together. We do, motivational speaking together.
Watch out for those motivational speakers.
there they are.
Wink, wink.
And then, yep. And then you're going to love this one. He's a semi-professional model.
Really?
Yeah.
I love it.
So we want to start doing it where it can be, you know, part of. Listen, you know, it costs money and living in L.A., and he wants to live in Santa Monica, so he's got to help out.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. Well, I love that for numerous reasons. Number one, because it shows that he's emboldened.
Yeah.
And he wants to put his face out there, not just because I'm sure he's a handsome lad, because he wants to put the face of autism out there. And not only that, but the world we live in needs to see more people like Neil.
Yes. Yes. He types that we are emissaries.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Which he is.
Yeah.
So how do I become a fly person?
Oh, wow. Come and sing with us. We've changed the name now. It's the Miracle Project Live. And
very cool.
We have performances. We perform throughout Los Angeles. We've performed at the United Nations, or we're taking it on the road. So come play with us. That would be awesome.
And what about Stevie Wonder? Was that an easy task, getting him to perform with your students?
So our students performed with Stevie Wonder at a Stand Up to Cancer rally.
Right.
And then he also gifted the producers of Autism the Musical his song,
wow,
which was really incredibly generous.
Well, you know, you just touched on something very important besides the very, very cool factor of Stevie Wonder and what he did with his time and gifting. But also, you're giving your students, I should say, a sense of community. Now, you're actually working with them for a different cause.
Yeah, what they get through the Miracle Project is, you know, the singing, the dancing, the acting is part of it, but they do get this completely inclusive community, and we're never alone. Mm-hmm. When I travel, I mean, I present all over the country, and so often I hear how families are suffering depression and isolation, and you know, especially our kids with invisible disabilities, Asperger's, you know, the anxiety and aloneness, and our kids, we have friends, we have community, we have social outings with and without people with autism. We're never alone. I have kids who've come to me at 14, 15 years old, never had a friend, and now they have sleepovers and best friends, and just, you know, they create. We have one student who's now writing his own musicals on his own.
Wow. I love it. I love it.
And casting my kids, you know.
And you have students that are employed.
Oh,
and also acting as well.
Yes.
As you mentioned.
Professionally, yeah.
And then the Miracle Project doesn't stop there. You have a superheroes camp, which I love.
Yes. Yes, we have. And our plan next summer is to bring that on the road. It's a superheroes camp. We've got all original music, and it's a 5-day camp that is really great, really fun. And we've been asked to bring it to different places. Brown University will be bringing it to Brown University next summer.
And how did you expand to India and Ethiopia?
Well, they called us and asked us to do workshops. So I've actually, you know, we did some workshops there. And as I mentioned, we've now going and did some workshops in China. I was just in Hong Kong. I got an email also in the middle of the night last night for Thailand.
Great.
And, so it's, you know, I'll bring the message wherever it's needed.
Wow, you're on top of the mountaintops just being heard. It's unbelievable, Elaine. That's great.
Thank you.
There are enough hours in a day for you?
Oh, please, no.
Do you
but
miss...
like what you said, how important it is that
oh,
we nurture ourselves and give ourselves those times, you know?
So do you miss working with the George Clooneys in the world?
Well, that's what's you know, ironic is I'm back in the film business. I do a lot of coaching for directors who are working, who include, you know, a character with a disability. I work with actors who are portraying roles of individuals with disabilities. I'm a consultant on two films, you know, to help them portray disability, autism specifically, in a real, true way. I'm just worked with a writer who's working on some things. There's some people talking to me about doing my story as a film. So it's still there, you know. It's still there. It's fun.
Is there often an argument with casting directors, Elaine Hall, and or directors, why they should actually cast somebody with autism or Asperger's or whatever the scenario may be versus actually just having, I hate to say, an actor without a disability in the part?
That's such a great question. And actually, right now, autism is in. So I've just had, since I got back from Hong Kong, I've had a number of calls from casting directors who really want to cast people who have autism in the roles of people with autism.
Good.
And I think that's great. What I make very, very clear is it's still essential that you cast a good actor. And So what we're doing with the Miracle Project is we are training actors, you know, who happen to have autism, because there are roles that are going to be available. And one of my students just auditioned for the Curious Incident, Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night.
Yes.
National tour. One of my students just auditioned for that.
Wow.
And got a talent agent because they want someone with autism to play
Fantastic.
That role, which I think is phenomenal. And what we need to do is to provide opportunities and training facilities, because a lot of our kids can't make it in a traditional acting class.
Mm, sure.
So that's where I think the work needs to be done. And that's one of the things I was up in the middle of the night creating, was, you know, a whole professional training program for teens and young adults with autism, because the opportunities are there.
Wow. Very, very impressive, Elaine, on so many different levels. Wow. I have to go back a minute to when you were talking about referring to your faith and Jesus carrying the tablet. It reminds me of a very quick subject here, a story here, a snippet of a story that I tell students and or audiences when I have a huge, large print dictionary that weighs almost 13 pounds that I was given when I was in sixth grade by the New Jersey Commission for the Blind. I'm like, man, I could use some angels carrying that thing. Oh, man, Elaine Hall, such a pleasure speaking with you, founder and director of The Miracle Project. Website is themiracleproject.org, themiracleproject.org. Always in need of volunteers and donors.
Absolutely, absolutely. We want to make this available. And, you know, back to the faith, is I started a consulting company for faith-based
organizations. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's called Inclusion From Within.
Have you forgotten to tell me something that you've cloned yourself?
That's the whole thing.
Oh,
I replicate
God.
It so others can do the Miracle
yeah.
Project as well. That's
good.
Exactly
good for
it.
You. All right. Well, you're doing miracles
faith,
every day.
Faith-based communities really need your voice, my voice, to get this going.
Absolutely. And we need some funds to make that happen.
Please.
Besides good sweat equity.
Yes.
And big hearts.
Yes.
Elaine Hall, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. What a pleasure.
Continued success to you.
Thank you.
My name is Mark Farrell. The show has been Insight. Special thanks to Michelle Spitz, who has introduced me to the incredible Elaine Hall, and to Luke Farrell. And my son Luke Farrell wants to say something to you about summer.
Happy summer.
Yeah. Whatever you're doing this summer, hopefully you get some time to get out of the office today or tomorrow or sometime. Of course, this show and every show is available on PRN.fm. Go on the archive page for Insight. And of course, if you'd like to have me speak at your school, college, or organization, or camp, MarkFarrellMotivation.com, MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Have a great day.